Father, thank you for this evening. Thank you for the time we can be together. Thank you for those that are here. We thank you tonight for your word. And Father, as we study the history of Israel and you're creating a nation from a group of slaves, we just thank you for what your word records. Just pray and bless our time together tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, any questions about anything before we get started that you might have had from your reading? Clear as mud.
I had a couple of questions, but I thought I'd wait until
okay. When we get there, then. That's fine. Okay, so what have we seen so far in this Exodus stage that we're in? We have seen, of course, the nation of Israel grow into a great nation while they were in Egypt. But while they were there, of course, time's going on, and the Pharaoh forgot about Joseph and everything that he did. So he wound up enslaving the nation of Israel. And probably many of the tourist attractions that many people go to Egypt to see, all the pyramids and stuff, were built by Hebrew slaves. I mean, they weren't the only slaves in Egypt, but there were lots of slaves. And, of course, God calls Moses, and Moses meets God in Exodus chapter 3 on Mount Sinai, and he meets him in a burning bush, and, of course, God encourages and commands and appoints Moses to be the one to lead the children out. And of course, we learn about the 10 plagues. And then in the 10 plagues, the final plague, the death of the firstborn, which is where Passover comes from. And the very first Passover, which the children of Israel were to take the blood of the sacrifice lamb and put it on the doorpost, right? And when the angel of death came, he would pass over that house, right? Then there's a meal that is partaken. And so, of course, then we saw them freed. Egypt came hot on their tail in hot pursuit, and they're at the Red Sea. And, of course, Israel's back is up against the sea. And they're coming, so God has Moses part the sea. Israel goes across dry land, and the Egyptians pursue, and the sea comes crashing down and destroys Pharaoh and his army. And then, and last week, we saw the nation of Israel at the base of the mountain, and we talked how God would give Moses instructions about the tabernacle and the priesthood and all of that, and he took an offering from the people, and millions of dollars were raised. How is that possible? What did Israel do before they left Egypt? They spoiled the Egyptians. Remember, the Egyptians were given a money and said, "Here, get out of it." Well, not money, but gold, silver, and whatever they could, and told them, get out of here. I think I wrote down the numbers somewhere. In today's dollars, just the gold, silver, and bronze to build the tabernacle today would cost $120 billion plus dollars. Okay?
Billion so, with a B.
No.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
$120 billion,
$120 million. I'm bad. Yeah. Am I wrong? So, which is a lot of money. That's just the gold, silver, and precious stone that the Egyptians gave. You know, so, and of course, the children of Israel did all this. They built it. And we learned about the priesthood. So today, we're going to learn about some of the other things the different laws that that God gave, and why would he give all these strange laws? Open up your Bibles to Exodus 19. And Barb, when you get there, read verses 5 and 6 for us. Exodus 19, 5 and 6.
Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, and holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel.
Okay, one more verse. Deuteronomy, fifth book in the Bible. Three more books to the right. Deuteronomy 14, Zach, read verse 2.
For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God, and the Lord hath chosen thee to be a peculiar people unto himself above all the nations that are upon the earth.
Okay, so we can read through some of these things and think, my goodness, you know, why some of these strange laws? You know, a lot of this stuff makes sense. Why would you want to do that? You know, some of the different laws about who you can and can't marry and you know, sexual laws and dietary laws and a lot of things. Why do you think, based on what we just read, why do you think God gave Israel these laws?
Because he wanted them to stand out.
He was making them a holy nation. What does the word holy mean?
Set apart,
right? A lot of times we think holy means, you know, we're always dressed in white and in a suit and, you know, but holy means set apart. And the word peculiar, we read there a couple of times, that's a word in the English that has lost its original meaning. Okay. If I say today somebody is peculiar, that means, you know, they're a couple fries short of a happy meal. You know, they're not all there, right? But peculiar means special possession. In particular, God's own people. So one of the reasons for this, we're going to discuss a couple of reasons, but one of the reasons for this was to set Israel apart from everybody else. Okay? To set them apart, number one. Number two, also to separate Israel from some of the wicked practices of the people who were going to be living around them. Okay? Don't sacrifice your babies to Molech. Why did they tell him that? Because the other people were, you know. Don't lie with men as with womankind. Why? Because many of the nations around them were practicing those things, you know. And, you know, don't marry your aunt. Don't, you know, have relations with your aunt because many of the nations around them were doing this, okay? And a lot of it was also for their physical protection. Eating some of the things that they were told they couldn't eat. Now, I don't understand all of it, but, you know, again, why the restriction on pork, you know, but I can understand why they wouldn't. Could you read in there, don't eat a bat. I could understand that. Who would want to eat a bat? You know. You know, but so I think some of the things were for their protection. Some of the things were for their sexual and mental well-being. You know, if the family tree is too close, you know, things can happen mentally and whatnot. So, and then of course, to separate Israel, to make them different. Okay? And of course, by the time Jesus comes, they had taken that far too far, and they had taken it to isolate themselves from everybody else. That's not what God wanted to do. But he wanted to make them different. If you study, if you ever have a Bible dictionary, or just look up some of the people, the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and you look up their, you know, things about them historically. Wicked people, you know, wicked people. And sadly, there were times that Israel took on some of these practices when they knew better. Okay? But here's what God wanted to do. I'm going to make you my own special people. Okay? My own special people. And you're going to be, every area of your life is going to be different than everybody else's around you. You're going to eat differently. You're going to look differently. You're going to act differently. You're going to worship differently. You know, and it all centers around the Lord. Okay? So that's the main reason. Okay? Of course, I think some of it also was health reasons and whatnot. You know, why they couldn't eat shellfish. Their fish have to have scales on it. Some of you people might not like seafood, so it's no big deal. But, you know. But that's no longer a restriction, Acts 15. Okay, the only restriction that God has put on human beings is no eating what?
Blood.
Okay? Yes, sir.
What I don't understand is, if there's any spiritual benefit to this,
mm-hmm.
why would it be gone away? Why wouldn't we still be honoring this?
Because Jesus fulfilled the law.
Right. But wouldn't the same spiritual benefits apply?
I mean, there are certain people still who don't eat those things, but again, you know, in Acts 15, just like before the flood, everybody was vegetarians. After the flood, they were allowed to eat meat, right? That's why God put the fear of man in animals, okay? So you couldn't walk up to your dinner and go, and then God, for his own nation, set them apart, you know. And why we don't have to do that anymore is because we're not under law, we're under grace. So, you know, but the one restriction is don't eat blood because the life is in the blood, you know. And there are certain cultures, my culture being one of them, that uses blood in food, Irish people, blood pudding. Don't eat black Irish pudding. It's made from the blood of a goat, of a pig. So don't eat it. Okay, you can eat the brown pudding. Don't eat the black pudding. Okay, even though they call it pudding, it's not pudding. It's it's kind of more like a very bready sausage. You know what I'm saying? So, but anyway. I've never eaten it, so.
I wonder if, I mean, you can kind of get a hint on some of these things that she said don't eat, that we know now, like, for instance, I've heard, like, a lot of people don't eat pork because their liver doesn't, like, it doesn't work the same way as ours, you know, so it's kind of like a dirty meat. And shellfish, bottom feeders,
yeah,
same thing. So I know, you know, maybe there was, this is why the Lord said no, and it wouldn't be a bad thing to go, you know, follow some of these things even today for
right.
that reason.
Right.
Not because
right.
it's
you know, there are people who follow the Hallelujah diet and say, you know, we were originally created to be vegetarian. Yeah. I don't care if you're a vegetarian. I don't care if you're a vegan. I don't care if you do the Hallelujah diet. I don't care if you do a kosher diet. But don't say, because the Bible says, that's what we're supposed to do. right? If you want to do that, great.
You could look at the Seventh-day Adventists and get a lot of good tips from them, but yeah, they've taken it too far.
Right. You know, and there is true. It's like catfish, bottom feeders, you know? And maybe, you know, there was a lot of really nasty stuff on the bottom over there. You know what I'm saying? And pork, you know, they live in a pigsty. I don't know. I mean, you know, and maybe they did not have some of the things we have today to help, you know. But, you know.
Well, if it isn't handled right in a hot environment.
Right.
Then don't you get, what is it, trichinosis?
I guess so. I've been in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone to their meat market and nothing's refrigerated. And the people I'm staying with cut off, you know, a ham from that pig that's hanging there with all the flies are on it. And they cut it off and they take it home and cook it, and I always pray, oh Lord. I've never got sick, but you know. But the main thing, don't lose sight. God was making them different in every way. That's the main thing.
So most of these laws are around diet?
No.
No, right? So no. Like the sexual laws we still abide by.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a diet was one part of it,
right.
You know, but not the whole thing.
Right.
You know, I mean, today it's a big deal because you know, is it kosher? Is it not kosher? Not a big deal for us, but a big deal for, well, not even for the Reformed Jew. I had customers in New Jersey when we had our business. We were in a very Jewish section of New Jersey who were Reformed Jews. That's the liberal Jewish people. Bacon, eggs, ham, salmon, they didn't follow a kosher diet. But an Orthodox Jew will follow, and Orthodox, not meaning those ones we saw like the Hasidic, they're ultra-Orthodox, but, you know, well, you have a hard time finding a bacon cheeseburger in Israel. You can find one, but you got to search for it. So.
But in 1 Peter 2:9, it talks about us as the chosen generation and the royal
priesthood. Right, exactly.
But that's all about our heart condition.
Right. And we are to be a set apart people for God. We are to be different from the world. It's just that it's not part of what we eat now. That's not it. So if you can see on the top of page 51, the Tabernacle's Handbook of Regulations, okay? So there is concerning diet, you know, what animal life you can eat, what marine life you can and can't eat, the bird life you can and can't eat, and, oh, here's my favorite, the insect life that you can and can't eat, okay? And I've never voluntarily eaten a bug. Bugs have flown into my mouth, there's the dietary laws, okay? Concerning motherhood, when woman had a baby, if she had a male baby, she was unclean for 40 days. And if she had a woman, she was a female child, she was unclean for 80 days, okay? And people say, oh, why the difference? Well, you know, this was a reminder. Not that having a baby was a sin. Not that having a female child was more of a sin than a male child. But it was a reminder that all of us are born with a sin nature, right? A man can't bring another person into the world, but a woman can. So if you have a woman, if you have a female child, you're bringing a life into the world that can bring another life into the world. So, you know, leprosy. There was a big section concerning leprosy. Now, that was important because leprosy at that time was a death sentence. And it was really, outside of a miracle, not you died over it, you know, and it went, you couldn't be healed from it unless God performed a miracle. So a lot of that was to protect the rest of the people. Oh, you're a leper? You have to live outside the camp. Because if you don't, the whole camp will become leprous. And even it goes into detail about things in a home, you know, and you could read some of that and say, wow, they're describing mold. What does mold do to some people in a house?
Breathing problems.
It causes health problems, right? So what do you, it tells you how to get rid of that mold and scrub it and if it's still there, burn the house down. You know? So, you know, and it told you, you know, the difference between, you know, oh, that poor kid, does she have leprosy or acne? You know, and so there was a distinction. Morality amongst your kinfolk, okay? And how you should treat your father, your mother, your sister, your granddaughter, your aunt, your uncle, your sister-in-law, okay? So, you know, again, being sexually moral, not immoral, and concerning benevolent, being benevolent to one another. Now back in the day, what did they do with apostates and devil worshippers and cursing parents? And they stoned you, okay? It's pretty severe. But this was, remember, here's another thing. Remember this. Israel was originally set up to be a theocracy, right? What do we mean by theocracy? We are a, well, we're not really a democracy. We're a republic, but, you know, everybody, we're a democracy. Democracy, people ruled. Theocracy, theos, God, ruled by God, right? So this is what, you know, so if God is your, not only your savior, God is your king, you better not worship anybody else, okay? So people read these things and they say, oh yeah, well, this would never, you would want us to kill people. No, we're not, America's not a theocracy, okay? Of course, rules for adultery, incest, sodomy, okay? Don't like to talk about it in today's world, but it was a terribly immoral crime that in Bible days cost you your life because it's not what God wanted. Indecent exposure concerning kinsman redemption. What happens if Nick, who's the oldest in your family?
Stephen.
Stephen's married to his wife. His wife, Stephen dies with no children. The next oldest is?
Mike.
Mike is supposed to have a child with Stephen's wife for Stephen's inheritance. Okay? Okay? Because what was so important? The land. And the possessions and, you know, the family name, okay? And it wasn't that became the wife, but it was to raise up seed. You know, all these different, all of these different laws. Now also punishment. What happens if it's your first, second, third, fourth, fifth time? You know, God showed grace, but, you know, recidivism, is that what we call it? You know? Yeah, so repeat offenders. You know, eventually, you know, how many times are we going to lock somebody up in America for the same crime? You know, sometimes you see people with, you know, a rap sheet that it, you know, and then, you know, other laws. So these are all the laws you will find predominantly in Leviticus. Leviticus is Leviticus. What do you see as the root word of Leviticus? Levi. Levi is the priestly tribe. So this is their handbook, their religious, maybe you could say it's like their constitution and bylaws, like we would have. And here's how we're going to run your nation. This is how God's theocracy is run. Okay? All right? So there's things in there that are carried over into some laws we see today, you know, but not, you know, not a lot. Okay? The nation of Israel today does not live this way. Orthodox Jewish people do not follow all of these laws. Even the ultra-Orthodox do not. They can't follow all of these because you'd be arrested. Okay? All right? Questions or thoughts?
Well, there were ceremonial cleansings for a number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that working in the wilderness because the tabernacle was right there.
Right, right.
But once they reached the land...
Well, like in what in general?
Well, like they were supposed to come to the temple after the child was born.
Right, right, yep.
And offer... And then there were some other things also in Leviticus 12 and 15 that they were to come. And it seemed as though they'd be running to Jerusalem every month.
Yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying, yeah. But,
so I didn't quite understand.
Yeah, and I don't know how all of that, some of it is just a setting apart, like a woman's menstrual cycle. Let's not, we're adults here, but, you know, it was a lot different in those days because, they didn't have the technology that we have today, you know. And, but the other thing is, you know, blood and issues from the body were an unclean thing and protecting each other, you know. What about blood-borne diseases today, right? What happens if a nurse is in the hospital and she gets, you know, she's got to go through all kinds of tests if somehow she gets infected by somebody's blood. Having a baby and being set apart for 40 days. You know, there's a lot of protection in that for the woman, too. Good grief, you could be having... You still could have a baby, you know, Irish twins, but give the woman's body a little break here and there, too. So a lot of this is good health practice also, okay?
Yep.
Look at Leviticus. Joanna, read Leviticus 17:11, and then as soon as she reads that, David, read Hebrews 9:22.
And Moses did so as the Lord commanded him. So did he.
Oh, is that Leviticus 17:11?
Oh, sorry.
Hebrews 9:22.
For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that maketh an atonement for the soul.
Okay. And Hebrews 9:22 says,
and almost all things are by the law purged with blood, and without shedding of blood is no remission.
Okay, so Hebrews is quoting part of Leviticus here, and the preciousness of the blood, right? The blood was, a little bit was to be used, you know, for the sacrifice. The rest was to be, you know, buried in the ground. It was precious. It's the life. It's the life force. No blood, no what? No life. I mean, I saw this vividly in my father these last couple of months when he was bleeding so bad and had to have, I don't know how many units of blood are in your body, but, you know, the first time he went, he needed 3 units. The second time he needed 3 units. And, you know, the color went out of him and the life was going out. He could hardly move. He could hardly breathe, you know, so the life is in the blood, right? You stab somebody, you shoot somebody, they bleed out, they die, okay? And God was saying that the sacrifice, you know, the shedding of blood means death, okay? And the wages of sin is death, okay? And so God had given the sacrifice, and of course, all in fulfillment and pointing to the Lord Jesus Christ, right? So, and we see that from Genesis 3 on. So, and of course, ultimately fulfilled in Jesus. Okay? Good? So, God gives all these laws, and God tells Israel to build the temple, the tabernacle. They build it. They set it up. And look at chapter 40 of Exodus. And in chapter 40, verse 32, Nick, read 32 through 35.
When they went into the tent of the congregation, and when they came near unto the altar, they washed, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he reared up the court round about the tabernacle and the altar, and set up the hanging of the court gate. So Moses finished the work. Then a cloud covered the tent of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter into the tent of the congregation, because the cloud abode thereon, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle.
Okay, so what happens? It's all completed, and it's completed according to the pattern, and it must have been completed correctly, because who took up his abode there? God, the Lord. Okay? So that is the book of Exodus, and that is from the time Israel left till the setting up of the tabernacle, about 11 months time, okay? And of course we know they wouldn't get home for 40 more years, but so, and then of course Leviticus, the next book is the law book. But in Numbers, and if you know, you think of the book of Numbers. Why is it called the book of Numbers? Well, it's because the congregation of the children of Israel are numbered. Okay? And, in chapter 1 of Numbers, the census is taken, and there are 2 occasions which Israel was numbered, and the first is in Numbers 1 and 2. This is in April. And 38 years later in the desert of Moab, Numbers 26, the census here is counted. And the total was 603,550 men. Okay? So it's sad to know that those 603,550 men, only 603,540, or not only, but 548 of them would perish in the wilderness. Only 2 of the original men would make it into the promised land. And that's who?
Joshua
and Caleb. Okay? Because all the people, remember they sent the spies, right? And they sent the spies in, and 10 came back with a report, you know, well, you know, they, oh man, the milk, the honey, the fruit, look at these grapes. The grapes were so big that the cluster of grapes that men had to two men had to carry it on poles on their shoulders, right? And they, oh, yeah, and then the word, but. The sons of Anakin are there, the giants are there. We can't go. I mean, Joshua and Caleb said, let's go right now, we got them, no problem. You know, they had faith. But the spies are still looking with the natural eye, right? They forgot what God did to Egypt. They forgot what God did to Pharaoh. They forgot what God did providing them the whole year with water and manna and forgot all that and looked with their eyes, so much so that the people said, no, we're not going. So for all of the days that they wandered, 40 days in the land, spying it out, God says, a day for a year, you're going to wander around the wilderness 40 years. Basically, why? Punishment.
Unbelief.
Unbelief, and for all those people to die. So look what he says in the next paragraph. Much speculation has centered around the census figure. If taken literally, which we take it literally, it would strongly suggest a total Israelite population of over 2 million. The problem, therefore, arises concerning the care and feeding of this multitude for nearly 40 years. Much of it is spent in a desolate, arid desert. For example, it's been estimated that it would require nearly 50 railroad boxcars of manna per day just to feed the people. That would not take into account the physical needs of the thousands of animals that accompanied them. The water needs would likewise be immense, some 12 million gallons per day. It, in fact, the ground area needed to accommodate this multitude when they encamped at night would exceed 100 square miles. That's a big area. That's a, you know, and that's a lot of food and a lot of water. But who's providing for them? God. So this is like, friends, we think, oh, that's nice. God fed them with manna. Well, you know, if there's 605,000 men, and the majority of those men are married, that figure doubles, right? And the, if they have the average family's two kids, that figure doubles, right? So, you know, it's God we're talking about though, okay? And of course the Bible deniers say this is not possible at all. But think about this. Here's a sad thing. All these people are wandering around to die. How many Jewish people are buried in the Sinai Peninsula? And how many funerals a day does that equate to? You know? A lot. You know? But that's what they're... Now, of course, people are being born. And, well, the people who were... the children who lived, they didn't die, but these adult men died. Okay? These adult men died. Well, I mean, they must have. What is there to eat in the desert? I mean, there were times, though, if you do read through this, there were times when they came on towns, they bought food, they bought supplies, so, you know, if they didn't like only eat manna, but their vast majority of their diet was manna, okay? Manna burgers, manna souffle. What'd you say?
Oh. I said spaghetti.
Oh, your manna spaghetti, Barb.
Well, my question is it possible that the terrain was not as desolate at that time as it is today?
That is a possibility, but it was still called a wilderness, you know.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, and there were times when they came to oases and, you know, so, yeah.
Because I think of there's a section in Africa that is being, becoming
mm-hmm.
more
mm-hmm.
desert-like
mm-hmm.
and barren than it was.
And that's a very good possibility. Yeah.
So I wondered if there was a possibility.
So that camp and the picture I gave you guys last week.
The tabernacle.
It kind of shows a little bit of the encampment around it. But that's like a huge camp. It's like a city.
Yeah.
Right? You know, if you think of that many millions of people, right? You know, and of course it gives you here the layout also, you know, the east, the north, and the west, and the south, and how the camps were set up. And then in the book, it also, on the opposite page, page 53, gives you, you know, Moses leads the way with Aaron, then the ark, and then you had, you know, Judah, and you had the ark and whatnot, and then, of course, the last, very last, was the mixed multitude, you know. Imagine seeing that coming. You know, I'm sure they didn't walk exactly that squarely perfect, but you know, imagine seeing that coming. And no wonder Balak panicked and hired Balaam. Of course, you know, he should have surrendered to God, but he didn't. Okay.
The picture that you gave us here.
Yeah.
This looks like maybe 2 miles.
I know.
It's like 4 square miles.
I know. I mean, it's...
Yeah, no, I'm just saying,
yeah.
Imagine it being,
yeah.
You know, 25 times bigger than that.
Yeah.
We can always have
to go to Joseph. It's big to get to the tabernacle.
Yeah, probably. And again, this is estimating, you know, how close to get. Yeah, we can't be dogmatic on every one of these things. You know what I'm saying? But, the number's huge. So if a number is huge, the footprint has to be huge, right? You know, besides the animals.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people. And again, I'm thinking as a human being on this, okay? Not as a spiritual person, but just simply below the sun. That many people, Pharaoh let go. Now you kind of know why. You probably, what did I do to our country? I mean, even though God destroyed their country, but that workforce just gone. So you can understand the humanness of his going. I'm not saying he's right, and I'm not even, you know, but it you know, there's a lot of things going on here, you know. Of course, the spiritual perspective is, you know, first and foremost, Pharaoh, you really messed up because you didn't let my people go. And so if you would have just let them go, you know, yes, your economy would have suffered, but your whole land wouldn't have been destroyed. But anyway, you know, so. So Levi was not numbered. We're on page 52. Kind of the middle of the page there. It says, Levi was not numbered. They were excluded from the census, and Levites never numbered because the Levites were gods, but they were sent to be the priests, right? And it tells us in Numbers 4:48 that there was 8,000 of them. Now, they were numbered, but not amongst the people, okay? And it's estimated, if the estimated population is 2 million, then, and the priesthood is 8,000, then each priest would be responsible for 233 people. Okay? So, that's a lot of people for one priest. But that's, you know, interesting. Priest had to be 30 years of age before he could fully enter into the service of God, Numbers 4:3, and Luke 3:23. How old was John the Baptist and Jesus when they entered the ministry? 30. Okay? That was very important. Because, why? Because the Jewish people, their culture, they wouldn't have listened to anybody younger than 30. You're just a pup. You have no life experience. And which is kind of true. Anybody here under 30? A couple of you, okay? You're just getting started. I mean, I was married when I was 20. I bought a house at 21. I bought my own business at 22. And, you know, and I thought, oh, yeah, look at me. I didn't start getting smart until I was in my 30s. I'm not saying you guys aren't smart. I'm not saying that. But when you turn 30 and you get older, you will realize when you're older, I didn't know enough. You know, think about it. You know, you're going through this now. What do you really right now know about raising kids?
A whole lot.
There you go. I mean, but you're learning.
Yeah.
And you will learn. So you will gain life experience. And, David, what do you know about living on your own yet? Nothing, right? But you're gaining that experience. So, 30, you know, you're still strong, you're still healthy, and you've got experience under your belt, you know?
Just out of curiosity, how old are you?
How old are you? He's asking Zach, how old are you?
I'll be 28 this year.
There you go.
Awesome.
28. So.
I thought we were the same age.
Okay. So, but you know, and then when you're 30, you know, you get a little, then when you turn 40, you realize, I didn't know anything when I was 30. And then, you know, you get older, you do get smarter.
70 is, you say, the worst mistakes I ever made
were
between
16
and
20. And yeah, and it's kind of funny how these things happen. But you learn. And that was the thing. They spent from their 20-year age to 30-year age learning about... So here was the cycle. 20 to 30, you were a student. 30 to 50, you were a priest. 50 to whatever, you taught the younger people. So that was the cycle. The people who no longer were in the priesthood were teaching the people... In the priesthood, did I say 30 to 50? Yeah, 20 years, right? 30 to 50. Those 50-year-olds are teaching the 20-year-olds how to be a priest. They've done it. Mm-hmm. You're learning. So there was always that cycle. You were training for the priesthood. You were doing the priesthood. You were teaching the priesthood. So that was an excellent cycle. You know, I know of some guys that go to Bible school, the Bible Institute that I went to, every teacher was a pastor. So either currently or at one time a pastor. So there was practical experience. Nathan, when he was here, said that he went to Bob Jones and some of those people teaching pastoral courses never pastored a church at all, and they were just giving you information, no practical stuff, you know. I went to vocational school, and my shop teacher, Mr. Rod, his name was Rodriguez, but everybody called him Mr. Rod. You know, he had his own business for multiple years, so he was a, you know, an experienced mechanic, so he taught us, and big difference. Okay? And then you can see the arrangements up there of the tribes around Judah, of course, being there. Of course, the sons of Aaron are right before the gate. Why is that? They're the priests, right? They have to go in there. And you can see all the way around the different Gershonites, Merites, Aaronites, and Kohites. Kohathites, that's all the tribe of Levi. So they're all around the tabernacle. Why? They got to set it up. They got to take care of it. They got to do the ministry of the tabernacle. Okay? Numbers 6, we learn about the Nazirite vow. Okay? Of a person in the Bible, if they were to be a Nazirite, it meant they were to be set apart completely for God. He could not taste the fruit of the vineyard in any matter. He couldn't have grapes, grape jelly, grape juice, wine, nothing. Okay? And he couldn't cut his hair, okay? Which tells us that if you're a Nazirite, you can't cut your hair is long. That's the setting apart point. So what was most of the other men's hair must have been? Short, okay? And you could not come in contact with any dead person. Who are the people in the Bible who were lifelong Nazirites? First one to come to your mind, Samson, okay? He would be a Nazirite. The angel of the Lord told his parents he'll be a Nazirite his whole life. So he had long hair. And when he cut his hair, you know, not that the strength, but it's interesting. He broke every one of these rules. He got drunk. He had his hair cut. And he came in contact with a lot of dead things, right? He ate the honey out of the dead lion. Who else besides Samson we're told in the Bible was a lifelong Nazirite? Who was the last judge before the kings started? Two books in the Bible named after him. First and Second Samuel. Okay, Samuel was a lifelong Nazirite. Who was the prophet who defeated the priest of Baal? Elijah was a Nazirite. And a really interesting looking guy in the New Testament. John the Baptist. Okay. Paul took a Nazirite vow, which means you could temporarily do it, okay? But these four are four that we know of who had a lifelong Nazirite vow.
Okay? Could you just give us a quick overview of what makes a Nazirite? Is that in relation to the other ites that are around?
Well, a Nazirite, so look at, where is it? Numbers 6. Numbers chapter 6. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazirite, to separate themselves unto the Lord. So this was something that you could do voluntarily, like Paul did. So for a period of time, I'm vowing this vow, and I'm separating myself to the Lord. Okay? Now, Samson and John the Baptist were told by, their parents were told by God, they're going to be lifelong, okay? So God set them apart. But you could make this vow, and where you would vow a vow and separate yourself unto God, okay? Totally for God's service. And you'll separate yourself from wine, strong drink, shall drink no vinegar of wine, vinegar of strong drink, neither shall ye drink any liqueur of grapes. That means, you know, like a jammy type thing. Eat moist grapes or dried raisins. Nothing. Okay? All the days of separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. So again, what was very important in the life of Israel in that time? Grapes, right? So, you know, you're setting yourself apart from even the basic necessities here, okay? And all the days of his separation he shall eat. Verse 5, all the days of his vow of his separation, no razor come upon his head until the days be fulfilled in which he separateth himself unto the Lord. He shall be holy. He shall let the locks of his hair on his head grow. All the days he separateth himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body, okay? He shall not make himself unclean for his father, his mother, his brother, sister, when they die, because the consecration of the Lord is upon his head. Okay? You're separating yourself from even your family. and you're not able to do even the responsibilities that you would do if you weren't separated. All the days of his separation, he's holy unto the Lord. If any man die very suddenly near him, and he hath defiled the head of his consecration, he shall shave his head in the day of his cleansing. On the seventh day he shall shave it. On the eighth day he shall bring two turtles, not turtles like snapping turtles, but turtle doves, or two young pigeons, to the priest, to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. The priest shall offer a sin offering and other burnt offerings and make an atonement for him, for that he sinned by the dead, and shall hollow his head the same day. And he shall consecrate unto the Lord the days of his separation, and shall bring a lamb. And this is the law of the Nazarite. When the days of his separation are fulfilled, he shall be brought unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. He shall offer his offering of a lamb and a basket of unleavened bread and cakes and fine flowers. And the priest shall bring them before the Lord, shall offer his sin offering, his burnt offering, ram offering. And then he shall shave his head in verse 18 at the door of the congregation. And the priest shall make, and then, you know, it goes on to talk about that this is the law.
Just to be separated, just to be, you know, available for whatever certain...
Right. I mean, it doesn't go into detail what the vow is, mm-hmm. but you're vowing a vow unto God, right? And service, you know, whatever. You know, Paul said he had a Nazarite vow, didn't tell what. Now, of course, Samson was to be separated from birth. Of course, Samson didn't do what he was supposed to do. And when Samson acted in the flesh, nothing happened. When he acted in the spirit, you know, Samuel, of course, was used mightily by God. Elijah was used mightily by God. John the Baptist was used mightily of God. You know, they set themselves apart. Okay? I don't know if that fully answered your question, but, you know.
I was just wondering if there was, like, a particular calling, but it was mostly just a
right.
general of being available.
Right. And we're not told, like, how many people took Nazarite vows, but we are told that there are certain of them that God, you know, told them, your kids are going to be Nazarite, separated for me their whole life. The whole nation is separated, but from that nation, I'm taking, you know, these unto myself, so they have to be Nazarites. So, okay? Good?
Yeah.
All right. Look at number 6, since we're in number 6. This is the great benediction that Aaron was supposed to say over the children of Israel. In verse 24, the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. You notice it's a triune blessing, right? You know, the Lord, the Lord, the Lord. And this is what they asked. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon thee. Be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. So this is a great benediction and was given by Aaron to the people. And the last thing we'll look at is the two silver trumpets of the tabernacle in Numbers 10. The trumpets were sounded for four specific reasons. To summon, if both trumpets were blown, the entire congregation was to gather at the tabernacle. Years gone by, I mean, we still have church bells, but years gone by, what was the church bell? To call people to worship, you know, to come. You know, a lot of times the church bells were alarms, you know. We notice it was also to give warning in case of attack, right? What did the army use in years gone by? Bugles, right? And certain bugle calls meant certain things. Charge, retreat, you know. And when Israel was to go to war, there was a certain sound the trumpet would make. And then at Israel's appointed feasts, there were trumpet blasts. Okay? Because think about it. We just talked about this encampment, right? How are you going to gather all the people together? Blow a big trumpet, right? That people could hear.
For miles
and
miles.
And depending upon the sound of the trumpet, we're moving, ooh, we have to gather, you know, enemies coming, you know, so it would warn the people. Okay? Good, bad, different, clear as mud.
Good, bad,
ugly. Any questions or thoughts?
Since the camp was, you know, all those hundreds of miles wide, you know, a single person, if they had to bring, I just wonder, they have to take journey to the tabernacle.
Yeah, I'm sure there were probably people close that were like the, I don't know, messenger, or like the heads of those family, you know. Okay.
Telephone game.
Yeah.
Send word up.
Right. You know, so we'll go find out what they want, and then we'll send word to, you know, so. Because, you know, right close by would have been the heads of Judah, the heads of Issachar, you know, so they could get there quick. And then I'm sure they had messengers to go tell everybody else in the camp and whatnot. So, all right? Any other thoughts, comments, ideas? It's a lot of people, isn't it? I mean, when you think about it that way, you know, I don't know if I've ever, I mean, there probably have been times I've, you know, but how many people were there? Every day for 40 years. Millions of people. I mean, I would have never thought 50 boxcar. I mean, that's every day. That's a lot of food.
How much was it? There were owners?
Yeah, so I read things. It's like a quart to a gallon, you know. Yeah. So.
And, I mean, if they went outside their tent and it was...
just there.
There.
Yep.
And they gathered it all up and they filled their bucket.
Yep.
And then they went and they fixed it.
Yep.
And if that was the case around every single one.
Yep.
Then they would have enough.
Yep.
The animals are different.
Right.
Question.
Right. Right. And again, we have to be careful being dogmatic with the animal and whatnot, but it would seem that the animals were eating this too, so it must have been awful nutritious.
What is manna? Have you had it?
No, no one's had it.
No, it's
had
angel.
It's angel food. It was manna means, I don't know if you were in Africa or, manna means, the name manna in Hebrew literally means, what is it? You know, no one had ever eaten it before. It gives a description in the Bible of what it might taste like, but it's angel food sent down from, you know, and obviously it was made into some type of a bread form. You know, they beat it and they baked it. So, and they could boil it.
And they could boil it.
Yeah, so.
What is it? It's kind of exciting.
But it had to be nutritious, right? Because we'll find out.
Yeah.
What is it? So that's kind of different than, you know, when mom cooks something and you look at it and you go, what is that?
I don't
know. Yeah. All right. Next week, folks, read from where we stopped on page 53 and go to page 56 and stop in the middle of that first paragraph, Roman numeral. Or no, not Roman numeral, letter I, where it says a snake problem. Okay? Stop there. All right? Thanks, everybody.